Hey folks, Tyler from Being This Person here. This is the last face-to-face conversation I've had for this. I'm not done doing them, but there are going to be a lot more that have been done through the internet for obvious reasons. The world is an interesting place right now. This is a conversation with a guy named Jeremy. He also goes by Dirtball. Partially that's his hip-hop name, but it's also the name of a snack he makes, which is actually, you'll hear us talk about it. But they're super tasty. They're called Dirtballs. They're actually super healthy. There's good stuff, dates and papaya and such in them. You can find them at Snack Tack Food, SnakTakFood. If you're in the Eugene, Oregon area, you can find them at a lot of the local health food shops and such as well. Pretty good things. Look into them. I really enjoyed them. But he's a really fun and thoughtful guy. I had a great time. He and I had not met before. He was suggested to me as a guest by somebody. I got a hold of him and he came over to my house in the middle of a pandemic. We were very safe and kept our space and such, but it was good to see, you know, like somebody face to face to sit down and talk. He's also got a really quick wit and a lot of skills and experiences. He's just a fascinating guy. I think you'll really enjoy the conversation. I know that I did. I will, at this point, ask you to subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It is free, but it really does help me a lot with exposure and that kind of thing. So the more people that hear about us, the merrier, of course, the more we can get out there and our reach grows. I would also hope you would tell a friend, and not just about this podcast, but about podcasts in general, especially since we're all spending so much time alone or isolated right now. It's nice to have a friendly voice that you can listen to and identify with. So I think podcasts are a very important way to do that. So if you'd share with other people, that would be awesome. I do have an email. It is beingthisperson@gmail.com. All lowercase letters, no spaces. I also have a website, beingthisperson.com, and easily found on Facebook as Being This Person. I also have a Twitter. It is more of a personal Twitter, but I did initially build it just for the show. It has become something a little bit more than that. I'm not super active, but I'm active. It is at Donis Tyler, so DonesTyler. You capitalize the D and the T, and you can quickly find me out in the Twitterverse. Come on in and say hi. I also have a Patreon. Patreon, Patreon, is a way to support creators, which is really important since a lot of people can't make money as creators right now in the world, but it just essentially helps support the podcast. It is patreon.com/beingthisperson, again, all lowercase, no spaces, and for $1 a month, I'll send you a thank you note. Real life, personalized, signed by me and everything, thank you note, the old-fashioned way. I can understand if you don't want to give your address, but I promise I won't stalk. I'll just send a card. At that point, folks, thank you for listening. I appreciate you. Let's roll the theme music. First question is, who are you?
Well, I am a human on Earth. Some people call me Jeremy. Some people call me Dirtball. And I do a lot of different human activities.
Such as? I mean, like, you eat, you sleep, you poop, I hope, right?
I mean, yeah, I do some entrepreneurial things. I make music. I like to be out in the community, talking to people a lot.
You're hip-hop?
Yeah, I'm a rapper, singer.
Really?
Beat maker.
How long have you been doing that?
I started making beats in middle school and just kind of did it for fun all throughout high school and college. And then when I moved up here to Eugene, I was in San Jose before. Then up here, I just started to get a lot more, I don't like to use the word serious, but like, I guess disciplined about it.
And did you have a moment of inspiration that brought you there, or Was it because I also find, here's something that I go through if I go to a new area or something, because of the isolation, I start to get more creative because I don't have all those like outlets with people. So was there something like that maybe that happened that inspired this? Or?
Actually, kind of the opposite. I make friends pretty quickly, and I got lucky, moved up here, and then about 4 or 5 months later, fell in with just an amazing bunch of artists and musicians and creative people. Like my friend Augie, who named me Dirtball. Mm-hmm. He was one of the people I met, instantly clicked. He taught me a lot about just making good music. And, like, we actually had kind of, like, these creative boot camps where we went off to his spot out in Junction City for the weekend, just, like, making beats on beats on beats.
Just as long as you could stay awake for the whole weekend. Pretty much. Totally energizing each other.
Yeah, gassing each other up, coffee at 4 a.m., yeah. Like, weed and beer all day.
I love creativity. That kind of energy. Yeah, I do love that kind of energy. I've been in a couple lockdown situations. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a bunch of musical instruments in the living room and shit too. But so I love that kind of when you can get into that space with somebody. Mm-hmm. Is it? And so you were real lucky. This guy sounds like he's a root of this group, but he's also an inspiration in your life. You're still making music with him, or?
Sort of. He moved back out to Massachusetts a few months ago.
Everybody's doing everything on the internet right now.
Yeah, and that's actually something really cool about hip-hop is it's almost designed for the internet because the producer can just make a really good beat, email that to the rapper. I record my bars at my house, send it back to the engineer. The engineer makes it sound good. And then
puts them all together, does the splicing and leveling and all that.
Exactly.
Well, I agree. It would be much harder to do it with like a rock song.
You know,
like Def Leppard couldn't pull it off. They might because they might have the resources, but it would be really hard. Whereas electronic music or hip hop do lend themselves to that. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah,
maybe that's some of the reason that it has such a well that and it seems like hip hop artists are really prone to adopt social media and interesting avenues and release a single that gets a billion views on YouTube or whatever for out of nowhere, like. It seems like hip-hop is more prone to that. Do you feel that?
I mean, hip-hop, it kind of became, like, the dominant cultural force in the world. So I think there's also just a lot of energy and resources behind it. And I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than people realize when a single blows up on the internet. There's, like, a lot more people involved with the promotion, usually. Or maybe not. Maybe it is just something that catches the right vibe. And
so I'm pretty uneducated in this arena. So I may sound like an idiot, but I'm going to ask a question sounding like an idiot. Didn't like Lil Dicky blow up by just putting out his own little thing on the internet?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I know very little about him. I was impressed. My kid showed me some freestyle of him. I was like, wow, that's some skill.
Yeah, I suppose with him, I don't know how much of a like team he has working with him. But definitely, he just made his own niche. He made all these like funny videos, not taking himself super seriously.
Yeah, well, I mean, the name alone,
yeah.
Right?
Lil Dicky. No, and then he's really got bars, though. Like, he can really spit.
He can really say a lot of things very poignantly and off the cuff. Like I said, my kid showed me freestyle videos. It's unreal. But it's not like he had a Kanye behind him or something like that. And is this the behind-the-scenes stuff that you're talking about with things blowing up? Is maybe there's a group or, a Dre or a Snoop or a somebody behind them?
Yeah, sort of. Because, like, do you know Migos, that group?
I know the name.
Yeah, they're really big right now. And part of the reason they were able to blow up was they I don't remember how they met Gucci Mane, but they got into Gucci Mane's studio. Oh. And Gucci Mane was like, I see the power that you guys have, and I'm going to help you succeed. And, like, it's that sort of stuff.
Well, that's how hip-hop has always been.
I feel like that's just how life is. That's just, like...
Yeah, there is, especially in the arts.
Yeah.
Especially in the arts. Like, okay, I see you got something. Let me help you put it out. I think that's down because most artists don't have any fucking money.
I mean, true.
There's people like Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas. They come from money, but not lavish money, but enough money that they were able to produce an album in their home
yeah.
and blow up. Again, people behind him. Phineas, great name, right? Did you not know that?
No.
He does all our production work. If you're into the production side at all, he does some incredible work, I think.
I mean, that whole album she dropped was pretty next level.
It's off the charts.
Like, really creative production.
It is, for modern pop music, because I guess that by definition is what it is.
Yeah.
Not generally my genre. I was floored by that album. I can play that album 3 times in a row and not get bored.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Totally off of hip-hop, but... So, who else are you? Like, okay, so you come from San Jose recently?
Yeah-ish.
Originally from San Jose?
No, I was born in Maryland. Okay. And then we moved out to California, to Santa Rosa, California, when I was 8. And I grew up in Northern California there. I guess I'm somebody who doesn't really have roots the way a lot of people do. Because I have friends who were, like, born and raised in Eugene.
Yeah.
People are, like, if you're from New York, you're, like, from New York.
Right. But one of my dear friends who actually sits in that chair every Sunday mm-hmm. is from New York. He's lived here for 30 years. You know him. You meet him. You go, you're from New York.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So, moving across the country when I was 8, just, that's impactful. That was, like, my whole life uprooted. And I think this is something I'm actually just thinking of right now. That might be part of the reason that I deal with uncertainty better than a lot of people. Because, like, you're born, you're in a house, and you're like, all right, this is life. This is where we are. And then they're like, nope, we're driving for 8 days, and now we live in California. It's like, whoa.
So I totally agree with you. I also, my family moved around a lot as well. You were talking earlier about how you make friends pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the moving around contributes to that.
Because definitely.
You kind of have to. Like, you're uprooted. Shit's got to start over. You got to make a buddy on the playground, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's where some of that quality comes. There's hard parts about it, too. I'm trying to focus on the better ones. I mean, moving around is tough on a kid. Like you said, it's impactful. I think that was an excellent word.
Yeah. And it was like, I moved to, I think, 2 different schools when we were in Maryland. So before I was even 8, I had already moved neighborhoods and moved schools. And then I was in 2 different elementary schools in California before we really stabilized. So I didn't move around as much as people who are in military families or anything like that, but also more than a lot of people move around.
Yeah. I did my best to make my kid's life not like that. So he is born and bred in Eugene. Well, not born in Eugene, but pretty much bred in Eugene.
Yeah.
Since he was 2.5, 3, he's lived here. But that's one of those decisions you make when you become a parent. Like, what do I want my kid's life to be?
Yeah. I think about that all the time, and I'm not even anywhere close to having kids. I do really want kids, though.
Which is maybe why you think about it. Like, how am I going to treat my kids? Is that the thing you think about? What about having kids do you think about?
Oh, yeah. Like, what kind of life do I want to make for them? And how can I actually make that happen, conceivably?
What kind of life do you want to make for your kids?
Oh, man.
I mean, it's a very odd time to even envision a life for the planet.
Yeah.
And the people on it right now. But...
I mean, yeah, I definitely... A big part of me... I just don't want my kids to get wrapped up in all this, like, mainstream normie thinking. Like, I want my kids to live outside of the matrix, you could say. Like,
mm-hmm.
like put the red pills in the baby formula.
Give them to mom so they come through the breast milk or something?
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Science is making a lot of advancements.
It's going to come out of France.
Yeah.
Or Switzerland, maybe.
Yeah, I think I just... I want my kid to live a happy and free life and not get bogged down in society and other people's rules and expectations.
So where do you think that comes from? Where does that desire come from?
So I was studying journalism at San Jose State during the 2015 election. Which, yeah, let that one.
Yeah. I mean, you could be a journalist right now, but that was rough.
Yeah, and so I think that was the year that people really started to see the flaws in these systems, in like the mainstream institutions, and all the problems that are just entrenched in society because of that. And I would not want to raise a kid who just gets like trapped in that system. I guess I would want to see my kids change the world in a positive way. And so they would need to have the right mindset to make change and not just go along with where everyone else is flowing.
To think for themselves, make their own decisions, and find their own pathway. And if that means go with one side or the other, the bipartisan system, for lack of a better definition, mm-hmm. that we have, that means that. But, I don't know, maybe also encouraging them to not do that.
Yeah, I don't, like, if I could raise a kid to high school without teaching them the words Democrat and Republican, that would be amazing.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah, because I that's one of the things, is that it's not even a real conflict. It's like the Democrat and Republican. Yeah, it's a show. It's pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Like,
it is. It is totally pro wrestling, especially recently. But yeah, I applaud you. Do you think that's because you felt like you were raised to be a free-thinking individual, or do you think you learned it through experience?
I mean, I think I don't know how intentional my parents were about it, but they definitely gave me all the resources and chances to learn that I needed to become a free-thinking person. Like, they were always giving me just like science books, history books, helping me learn about the world in all kinds of ways.
They spoke pretty openly with you and candidly. You guys have good conversations and relationship kind of situation too?
I mean, for the most part, there's definitely some emotional repression in my family that we've had to work through. But for the most part, definitely good, honest.
Okay, yeah, because I think that leads to helping a person become an individual and think for themselves, and this kind of person that you envision, that it sounds like your parents gave it their best shot, you know, their college try, if you will.
Yeah. And that's important to remember. Like, that I really try not to focus on the like bad qualities of how I was raised, because everyone is just doing their best.
And right.
I'm assuming that raising a kid is really hard and complicated.
It's hard, and it's all fucking it's all guesswork.
Yeah, nobody knows.
Like, you can read all the books, but you still don't know how you're going to react when the fucking thing won't quit crying at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And you're not even calling it a child at that point in time. Like, yeah. Fucking thing, would you shut up? Walk in the halls.
Do you think there's a threshold where, like, it's a baby and then it becomes a person? Or is it always a person?
Pretty clear. So I've been an only parent for most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there at the birth. I pulled him out. I'm pretty clear that when he came out, he has character traits that he had right then. Because some of his behaviors, like just some of the ways he reacts to certain things, I still see in him today. And he's 22. So I think there is some, like, nugget.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to explain it all. It's a good question, because it is a question I've had. And I like to ask people the same kind of thing. Like, do you think that there's some piece of you that is... Like, and perhaps it's because I tried to do much what you're describing and raise him to be as, like, I'm artistic and musician and, you know, I like to talk to people for hours on end for no particular reason. Like, all that kind of stuff. He's an athlete. Like... He plays semi-pro lacrosse. I know, listeners, I know you're sick of it, but and it wants to be a paramedic, but is currently apprenticing as a plumber as well. Like, he's super pragmatic and smart, and I'm super proud of him, but he's totally different from me. Like, if you saw us on the street, people see us together, they're like, can see the resemblance, but he's like 5'10 and buff.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, you see how I'm built. 5'10 and buff.
Like, built like an artist.
Right. You don't run much, do you? No. I got off track there with that story. But, so yes, I was answering your question that I do think there is some tiny piece. Now, the rest of it, we build for whatever reason and however, I think.
Yeah.
Well, how about you? I mean, what do you...
I mean, I guess
you're not a parent, so you don't have the same experience, but what do you think?
No. I mean, my first job was working daycare. And I mean, different kids definitely have different personalities. I can say that much. And, like, I don't know. It would be interesting to see the kid that I did daycare for now, because that was, like, 7, 8 years ago. But I don't know. It's almost like the classic nature versus nurture question. I think the answer to that question is both. Like,
yeah. It's definitely both.
Yeah.
The things you go through and how you deal with them help formulate who you are. That's... If you deny that, you aren't looking at yourself, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And I think people get really hung up on, like, individuality. I think everybody wants to be special. And so, like, it helps to think that there is some inherent thing in you that, like, that's me. Whether it's the soul or, like, just the way your neurons are arranged, there's something unique about this human as opposed to that human.
Yeah, but there's almost 8 billion of us. There's got to be somebody kind of close.
Yeah. No, there's, like, do you know that meme image of the guy in the crowd? And he's like, the sudden realization guy?
No.
Oh, because he looks exactly like me.
Oh, really?
We have, like, the exact same facial structure. And that's very interesting. Because I think that I've seen a couple pictures of people where it's like, wow. Like, there's a picture of an Amish guy who got arrested, and in his mugshot, he looks exactly like me.
Nice. Nice.
But I'm not Amish.
Not in the slightest, apparently. I mean, you're sitting here drinking a beer with me.
Using technology.
Right. Exactly. Well, this is a good place to lead you into the next question, which is, why are you who you are? And we've kind of been chatting about that a little bit, but
yeah.
Why are you who you are?
Well, I suppose we could take it back to the Big Bang, and just, like, the universe started, and then all the atoms cascaded together to put me in this place as this person. I could also answer that from a more approachable human level. I mean, I am the way I am because I had really good parents who did their best to give me and my sister every opportunity. And because I grew up in a culture where you really are encouraged to explore your individuality, almost to a fault. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say why I am who I am. I'm kind of just feeling things out as I go along.
So, let's start with the example of that you gave first. It was kind of a universal example, the Big Bang Theory. Like, all the shit flew out from the Big Bang.
Yeah.
And it made everything. Like, so do you believe predestiny?
That's one I've been really trying to think through lately. Because everyone wants to think that they're in control of their actions and their fate to some level.
You think everybody does?
I guess a lot of people do.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't speak for everybody.
If you just said that, I wouldn't have questioned.
Yeah, no, sometimes I look at everything and it's like, there's no way I have free will. Like, because one of the ways I look at the world that helps me feel comfortable with how chaotic everything is like, humanity is a biological process on the organism that is Mother Earth. So we're like, I don't know what it's like to be a blood cell, but I would like to imagine that blood cells are really proud of, like, yeah, I'm going to pick up this fucking oxygen and I'm going to carry that to the lungs and I'm going to carry that to the brain and I'm kicking ass as a blood cell. But then to me, I'm just like, my blood is pumping and I'm still living. And that's probably how Mother Earth feels about us. It's like, I don't really know why all these little things are running around, but we're out here vibing.
I don't know. I think she looks at us a little bit more like fleas. This is really getting itchy. How can I get this off?
Did you watch that new Michael Moore documentary, Planet of the Humans?
No, I...
It's really bleak.
I think he lost his way a while ago.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, I still have respect for him being out there doing his work, but I think he lost his way a little while ago. If you want really bleak, though, there's a podcast by Robert Evans called It Could Happen Here, and it's about the next American Civil War.
Mm.
It's fucking terrifying.
It goes into a lot of, like, the militia culture and everything.
Militia culture and the divides and the cultural divides. And, like, he did it a year ago, and it's almost prophetic already. It's, yeah, bleak. You like bleak shit?
I mean...
You like scaring yourself?
I mean, my family's from Eastern Europe. And so I think I inherited a small part of that, like... The bleakness, like it, Russian culture, they're just like, da, everything suck. Like,
orbiting squares.
Yeah. So it's like, to me, I like to look at the world honestly, good and bad and the weird and everything in between. And part of what actually got me studying journalism, because I started out college studying animation. But then one night I watched this documentary about the cannibal warlords of Liberia. And I was like, there's...
Sounds like it'll fuck you up.
Yeah, I was super baked. Just like... And at first it was like, oh my God, there's people in the world who are acting like this. And then the second thought was like, and there's somebody in the world who gets paid to go out there and make movies about it. And I was like, I want to go make movies about crazy shit.
Right?
And then it never...
Throw myself into the middle of a war zone.
Oh, yeah. And I did that in small ways. Like, I went to some chaotic Trump protest rally, riot, whatever you want to call it. I went to Standing Rock while that was happening. So I'm definitely, like, I enjoy, on a certain level, going into the danger as opposed to away from it. Just because, like, I think there's always some truth to be found in there.
Let me sidetrack a little bit. What was your experience at Standing Rock? Because there's been another person on the show that was at Standing Rock, and she's Native.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious. It doesn't look like you have much Native in you.
Not
maybe
at all.
Maybe some? Okay.
Maybe like 0.001.
I'm just looking at you, but you said Eastern Europe, and that definitely doesn't. But, so what was your experience at Standing Rock?
It was bizarre, because part of the reason I went there was because I was in a broadcast journalism class. And I was arguing with the teacher all the time because she was teaching us to lie and to spin false narratives. And so I just said, fuck it. And like me and two other journalism buddies left in the middle of the semester, ostensibly to go out there and do some journalism. But as soon as I got out there, I was like, I can't journalize right now. I can't just stand around and talk to people. I've got to participate. Because I'm an Eagle Scout.
And so nice. I was. Congratulations. Well done. That's an achievement. Yeah.
It was tough. I barely made it.
I mean, I made it to Weeblos, so, like, you're way ahead of me, man.
Definitely. No, but so I was, like, I grew up with that idea of, like, serving and helping out. And so I got there, and it was, like, there's so many better things I could be doing than just writing some bullshit news story about this. So, I was helping out in the kitchen, cook food. I was helping build a house, like, an actual fucking wood frame house for people to shelter inside of. Because I was there in, like, the peak blizzard. And so there was also that element of it, like, you really might die out here.
Yeah. It was cold and snowy and...
Yeah.
Not a friendly atmosphere. Well, I mean, the atmosphere you were in was probably pretty friendly, but once you got to the front lines, it was a very unfriendly atmosphere.
I didn't actually go anywhere near the front lines, because there were, like, two separate camps. There was... the Standing Rock camp and then Red Warrior camp, I think it was called.
Okay.
And they were recommending, like, don't go to the Red Warrior camp unless you're willing to get arrested out here. Because that was the front line. It was pretty incredible out there. Because it was a really spiritual atmosphere. Because they were running everything on, like, traditional indigenous rituals.
Culturally, like, it's very spiritual.
Yeah.
Group of people, and when they get together for any reason, it seems they bring that element to some extent. So I would imagine it would be when they're being so politically active and so forthcoming with what their demands and desires are, I would imagine they'd bring that element there too.
Yeah, definitely. And so it was like, when you're in the lodge, you're only supposed to walk a certain way around the fire. Every morning there were prayers, and we would like, sprinkle, I think it was cornmeal, as like a offering to the sun, I guess. That sort of stuff. Cedar tea. They had a fire that was just burning nonstop. That was the, like, sacred fire.
kind of the heartbeat, if you will.
Yeah, something like that. It was intense. It was a really... That was one of the most life-changing things ever, because it was just, like, raw reality. It was historic, also. It was part of the reason I wanted to go out there.
It definitely was. Like, that one's going to be remembered, especially since everything everybody said about it has happened. Like, it's going to fall apart. It's going to make a mess. Already done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... If it doesn't make history books, we're not writing history books correctly.
I hate history books.
Yeah, they really... there's some shit going on with that in America. I don't know if everybody else has that, but we do here. Like, a whole piece of history just written away.
Mm-hmm.
Just gone.
Like, I black history is... This is the first time I've really, like, said this out loud, but it annoys me the way we talk about black history. Because it's grounded in slave history. And black history is way deeper than that. Like... I think it's horrible that nobody in school learns about King Mansa Musa and the Mali Empire, because there's just, like, so much more to the world than what they want us to know.
Well, and even just as an American, how much do you know, growing up in probably pretty white schools, how much do you know about the Black Panthers? They were a couple of paragraphs in a history book, I imagine.
Yeah, I think my parents did a good job of, like, opening that aspect of the world to me and my sister. Because at the very least, I remember stumbling upon my parents' like Doonesbury and Bloom County books when I was in fifth grade, and so that I started learning about those like alternative politics pretty early on.
That was a great delivery of alternative politics.
Yeah,
I was old enough to be voting when that was in. You know,
and yeah, like,
they were great. They were really great.
Yeah, and the Doonesbury book we had was like. It was during Vietnam, a lot of it, when he was hanging out with Fred.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was a whole bit of it. So that was probably Bush era, too? So did you run into the ones where Bush was represented as a feather?
I don't think they ever actually, like, had an image of the president. It was always just the podium with, like, the speech bubble coming out of nowhere.
If you go back and look, there was generally the podium, and then there'd be a feather. Like, he drew George Bush as a feather. Because it's hilarious.
like he's a lightweight, or
because he's that ridiculous. We obviously can't draw something that looks anything like him because he's the president, and you know this is clearly social commentary. But yeah, drew him as a feather. Mm. I always loved that. One of my favorite things. I think it was Bush 1, and maybe Bush 2. Fucking the fact that I had to live through both of them is enough.
Yeah, the fact that people are trying to do these political dynasties is ridiculous. Like,
they're not trying to. It's been that way all along, man.
Yeah.
It's been that way all... The Adams, there were two Adams in the place.
Hmm.
The Kennedys.
Yeah.
Like, how many Kennedys have been in some government office? Admittedly, some of the Kennedys have tried to do some pretty good work. Maybe tone deaf good work, but good work.
Well intentioned, tone deaf good work.
Yeah, but like the political dynasties are a thing.
I guess that's
related to money.
Yeah, you know? It's kind of just how power works, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunate truth. At least power in the society we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, back to, I guess that is some of why you are who you are, is because you think about this shit. But there were two other things I jotted down here. So I guess the first thing that you started with was the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Global, you know, universal kind of theory. The second one you mentioned is that you had really good parents who gave you and your sister lots of opportunities. So I just combined these two. Perfect. and so what does that look like? What does that look like?
The opportunities?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What kind of things did your parents endorse and stand behind and help you do? And
I mean, well, like, they sent my sister to this, like, nerd camp.
I went to band camp. Don't make fun of that shit.
No, but it was like...
Oh, like math camp or something?
Yeah, it was called... I forget what it was called, but she... There were a bunch of different programs. I also tried to get into it. I wanted to do the paleobiology program for this nerd camp. Yeah. So it was like a lot of different things. I think she did something that was more like artistic and culturally focused because she was a drama kid. like the theater arts.
Right. Not I was a drama kid. You're good.
But yeah, then I mean, just stuff like that, like putting me in Boy Scouts was incredible because I have so many skills. Like I can start a campfire. I can like fix shit. I can lead people to some extent.
You can find your way out of the woods, which is kind of important.
Yeah. I can not have like basic compass skills,
so, you know?
Yeah. And like that sort of thing has served me well throughout all my life. And again, just like, I think one of the big ones was just any time I was curious about anything, they would just help me learn more about it.
Nice.
Yeah, because my parents are both academic people. My dad's a dean at the Santa Rosa Junior College. Well, not anymore. He's been retired for a little bit. But my mom's got a master's in psychology, so they're, like, educated people.
Nice.
And so it was just, like, tons of science books, tons of, like, there was this series of kids' documentaries called Geo Safari. Just all kinds of learning growing up. And then just also putting us through college. They worked hard and saved well. So, yeah. All that sort of stuff.
Nice. That is, I would qualify all of that as excellent parenting.
Definitely.
Yeah. Those are things that I strive for. They're things my parents did. And much that encouraging learning outside of your education as well. Like one of the things my mom says is you never let your education or your studies interfere with your education. So, like, I was not very studious, not really good at school, but I love learning shit.
Definitely.
And so she was always kind of like, okay, at least he's learning shit. Let's put him in that. Like, he's got an interest in that thing. Go try that. And it sounds like your parents are kind of the same kind of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's cool. I like that. It's good that people come from places like that because so many people don't.
Yeah. And it sucks that other people don't have that. I don't have the resources yet to, like, provide that opportunity to more people, but that's kind of an underlying motivation for why I wanted to start a business, is, like, this might be a way that I can put myself in a position where I can help more people access more of life, you know?
How are you going to do that by having a business?
Well, by paying my employees better than a lot of these companies do. By making
a
fuck. I
heard you mention on Tiger's podcast, because he's how we got together, about how you in all your forecasting books are done with a minimum wage of $15 an hour for your employees.
Yeah.
So is that kind of the avenue?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, also just, yeah, I want to treat my employees well. Before I can do that, I need to, like, get the sales to a point where I can actually have employees.
Right. Well, and I need them too.
Yeah.
Like I've run a business out of my house. I know that it took years and I did it for a decade and never needed an employee.
Yeah. I could definitely use an employee. It's pretty hectic out here operating by myself. And thank God for the people who helped me. Like shouts out to Marshall, shouts out to Genesis and Brian and Emily if they're listening to this. Not Emily.
If you point them here.
Her name is Alex, not Emily. I don't know why I said Emily, but
they will if you point them here. But
yeah, definitely.
But all right, so quick plug for your product, then do that.
Oh yeah, so I sell a snack called Dirt Balls. It's made of dates, papaya, coconut, sunflower butter. It's inspired by the summer I spent farming in Fiji.
Farming in Fiji?
Yeah.
Shit, we're getting in some stuff. All right. Go ahead.
Another aspect of why I am who I am.
Right.
If I drink it.
Yeah, that's what it's here for. Here you go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, and to like we were farming in Fiji and eating dates throughout the day to like keep the energy up. Then we go down to the beach at the end of the day, pick some fresh papayas and coconuts. And all those just like wound their way into Dirt Balls.
Interesting.
So it's a healthy little energy snack.
That is.
I'm building up.
That sounds like sweet. It sounds like dessert to me. And I'm not much for sweet.
No, sugar is...
perfect dessert. I'm going to find
tough.
Out tonight, actually. Thank you.
Yeah. I hope you like them.
Yeah, everything you just described sounds like I will. I'm excited now. So Dirt Balls, I will, if you remind me at the end, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Right on, yeah.
So, anyhow, back to farming in Fiji.
Yeah.
What? How do you end up in Fiji farming?
So, it was at the end of my journalism education, and I needed an internship. And I had already pretty much realized I didn't actually want to work in journalism. So, I wound up actually basically just lying to the school, like, internship lady. Because I went on this job fair and found this volunteer organization called Help International. And they were like, hey, come do a volunteer thing in... They had a couple different countries, and out of all of them, I knew the least about Fiji. So I picked Fiji. It was like, the other ones were like Ethiopia, Nepal, some other ones.
My geography is terrible. So where on the globe is Fiji? Isn't it just like an island?
It's a bunch of islands. Semi-tropical? It's an archipelago.
Okay.
And it's to the northeast of Australia.
Okay.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of Australian influence in there. Half of the population is Indian, actually. So it's pretty even.
India Indian?
Yeah. Like eating curry and Hindu, that type of India. And so, yeah, it's like pretty evenly split between the native Fijian people and then Indian folks who have immigrated there. And then culinarily, the cultures have blended really interestingly because everyone just eats tons of curry, tons of rice.
Well, and when you're an archipelago, when you live on an archipelago, you have limited resources of food, too, because anything other than what grows there is shipped in.
Yeah.
So, like, you're going to incorporate all the things around. So, the coconut, the mango, and the dates and stuff at this point, right?
I mean, it's super easy to farm in Fiji. Like, they have such good soil there. It's like that black volcanic soil. And literally, a lot of people would joke that you can just throw a handful of seeds out and then come back in a month and you'll have a whole farm in Fiji. But, yeah, I think there are geographic constraints. I think they eat a lot of starchy root crops, a lot of cassava and taro, breadfruit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One hell of an experience. Well done.
There's actually one other weird detail, and that's that Help International, this group I went with, is a Mormon organization based out of Salt Lake City. So there were 24 of us there.
And you're the only one that wasn't wearing short pants and a white shirt.
Well, actually, we were all wearing man skirts because they're called Sulus in Fiji. And when you go to any formal event, you'll see people wearing, like, imagine a long skirt made out of dress pant material.
Okay.
With a tucked in Hawaiian shirt. Like, that's like formal garb in Fiji.
Sounds comfortable, actually.
Super tight. But yeah, it was like 24 of us, and only 3 of us were not Mormon. So that was an interesting thing that summer. I had to, like, hide my drinking and smoking from the Mormons.
At that age, I would have been the one that put it in their face. I wouldn't at this age, but at that age, I was much more rebellious about things.
Yeah, I try to be very respectful of people's religions, because do you know the Unitarian Universalist Church?
I do.
Yeah, I was raised in that from, from day one, okay. Yeah.
There's very few, for lack of a better definition, religious organizations that I get behind very strongly, but Unitarian Universalist is a good one, because they are, as defined, kind of, come on in, anybody.
Yeah.
We kind of all agree that there's something out there. They're pretty chill.
Is that me?
That's you. Mine doesn't make that noise anyway.
Yeah, no, that's my favorite. One of the 7 principles, though, is the free and responsible search for truth and meaning.
It's there you go.
There is no right way. I wish everybody grew up on that idea.
Yeah. It would be good. It would be good. Because I mean, it's not hard to find somebody who is even perhaps relatively atheistic that will also say that there's clearly something out there that's bigger than us as humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how they define that differs greatly. But that's kind of what that pursuit is looking for that. What is that thing that's out there? That universal thing, that giant thing. And that's the common trope in every single religion, is there's something bigger than us. Be it a bearded man in a chair, or, you know, your understanding, acknowledgement of pain and how to accept and or avoid it.
Yeah.
Or whatever the pursuit is, but it's all related to the bigger thing.
Are you a religious person?
Not particularly. I've had bouts with a couple of them. I bumped into a few along the way.
Dipped your toes?
Yeah, nothing took. but I clearly think that there's something bigger than us.
Yeah. I feel like you don't necessarily need to understand what that thing is in order to, like, live the best life. And it seems like people... That's almost where a lot of this conflict comes from, is from people assuming that they understand what it is and wanting to force that on somebody else.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot of it. And disagreeing on what that thing is strange to me, but seems to be very important to a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that conflict definitely comes from that space. I would totally agree. I'm going to move you to the next question,
mm-hmm.
which is, what makes you unique?
So I'm my sun and my moon are in Gemini.
Oh, you shifty fucker.
Yeah, no, and so I it seems like a lot of people see things from, like, one perspective, and I see everything from a minimum of three perspectives. And that sometimes that's really cool, and sometimes that's really frustrating. Because it's hard for me to... I'm looking at one thing from, like, four different angles at the same time. And it's hard for me to kind of, like, bring that back down to earth and phrase it in ways that make sense to other people. So that's something that's unique about me. Not necessarily that it's a good thing, but...
Well, having a broad spectrum of viewpoints to draw one opinion from that you then later convey, that I think is good. I understand the struggles.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I reacted the way I did, like, my kid's mother is a Gemini.
For sure. No, like, we can be very shifty. I can be duplicitous, for sure.
Yeah, right? Like, it's in the definition.
Yeah. And, like, because when you're just a Gemini, you have two personalities. And then when you're a double Gemini, I feel like you have four.
At least, yeah. Like, there's a bunch of people running around and they're doing stuff.
Actually, I've been thinking about it as, like, a bunch of cats with human voices running around. And they're, like, doing normal cat stuff and also just shouting completely opposite words at each other the whole time. That's how my brain works.
Well, I'm glad you get through it.
Meditation helps. Taking deep breaths.
Oh. Yeah, so do you purposely meditate? Do you, well...
No, I accidentally meditate. I just, like, trip and fall, and then I'm sitting there.
Well, I mean, it happens. Like, what happened? I sat down, and I just started breathing, and next thing I knew, a lot of people don't know that that's meditation. To rephrase my question, are you a guided meditation person, or are you a... quiet, open, yeah. Open mind meditation, or balance of both, or?
I definitely use guided meditation sometimes. Like, last week I was in a really bad place and I put on a Ram Dass tape because Ram Dass just fills man. You with love. Yeah. And it's amazing. But usually I'm mostly in the just sit down and shut up school. Like, there's actually one of the books I read was called Sit Down and Shut Up.
I love the practical meditation like that. Just shut the fuck up. Yeah. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, you just sit there, listen to your brain, and you're like, oh, that's what's going on in there. Mm-hmm. And just listen to yourself without judgment. Yeah. And, like, I try to do it every morning for about 10 minutes. Sometimes I fall out of practice.
I shoot for midday myself, also 10 minutes. And I also tend toward the just quiet, let the brain go thing. The way I define it, and again, anybody who's heard this before, but is a hotel lobby.
Mm.
And when I sit down, there's a whole bunch of people scurrying around the hotel lobby. And by the end of the 10 minutes, like, the hotel lobby...
Everybody goes to their rooms.
Calms down. Yeah. Like, shit is under control. I can have one thought come in, get their room key, leave. And that's kind of how I feel about it. And the way it works for me. Which is why I asked. Because, I mean, there's meditators and then there's not meditators. And that's however everything works for people. But I'm always curious about people's own way of doing it.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie The Grand Budapest Hotel?
No.
Oh, it's a good movie. Because that's the hotel I pictured when you said hotel lobby. Oh. Which doesn't mean anything to you.
No, but I may have to Google search an image, yeah. If you like the Ram Dass talks, a lot of the Alan Watts talks are excellent for guided meditations.
Definitely.
I really encourage you on those, too. He's a little bit heavy on the Buddhist side because that's where he lays. But it's... Like, his voice alone, just the way he speaks, can put me in a very special place.
Definitely. Yeah. It's crazy to think how, like, they would not have been the people they were if they weren't lucky enough to be born with beautiful voices.
Right.
Just, like, their voice is just at the right frequency where it goes straight to your heart.
It is. It is. So how do you feel about Terrence McKenna's voice? Because he's a hit or miss. Some people really love it. Some people don't.
I cannot picture what his voice sounds like.
Oh.
I know I'm a fan of the words that he says.
Yeah, his works are fantastic. Listen to it. He's got this weird bard-like storytelling thing to him that can kind of be jarring to some people. I love it, but another one, making recommendations and not talking all about anything we were supposed to be talking about, but also talking about exactly what we're supposed to be talking about. I'm going to press pause real quick.
Right on.
So now that we're back from break. Question number 4. Will you tell me about a defining moment?
I feel like I've already gone through a couple of them.
That always happens, yeah. I try not to say that, but you always have. Like, Standing Rock and Moving When You Were 8. And, like, there's been a handful of them. But pick one outside of those.
Yeah, there's another one. So in the beginning of college, I went through really serious depression. And, like, one of the defining moments was when I watched a TED Talk of somebody describing his experience with depression. And about 2/3 of the way through it, I realized, like, hold the phone. This is me right now. I'm fucking depressed. Holy shit. And I don't know why it took that for me to realize that, because I had been, like, planning my suicide. And yeah, just like realizing that was happening was a very defining moment, because if I hadn't had that realization, I probably would have killed myself. And like, I would have succeeded, because I was going to jump from a place that other people jumped from a couple years after. So like, that was weird. Seeing other people kill themselves in the way that I had planned to kill myself in the same spot. And that's been a tough one. That took a long... I'm still working through that to some degrees. I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that, because I'm a pretty upbeat, happy person these days. But that was a pretty... That was a life-changing realization, for sure. And just, like... Yeah, just getting to know the darkness and, like, working through my mental health like that. It was tough.
Have you been able to find any thing that made you particularly receptive in that moment to the connection you had with that TED Talk?
Well, I mean, there had to have been some part of my subconscious that was like, we got a problem, we gotta steer the ship out of this storm. And so even if like my conscious brain was kind of lost and confused, they're like, your intuition has to understand when something is wrong. And like, I can't consciously say anything that like made me receptive to that, but I just happened to be in the right place that day. And I remember I was sitting in a chair, just like an office chair, facing towards my mattress. I had the laptop on the mattress there. And it was just like clarity. It's like, wow, okay, so now there's like a name that I can put on what I'm feeling. And like once you can put a name on it, that's like the first step towards fixing the problem.
Yeah, I do agree. Naming or at least acknowledging that there's something going on. Are you okay if I pick at the scab a little bit?
Yeah, go for it.
I don't. If it gets uncomfortable, tell me. So, jumping off of something is a pretty elaborate plan. So you were in a pretty dark place.
I don't know. It feels pretty simple. I mean, I was in a dark place for sure, but it doesn't feel like it's that elaborate. It just makes perfect sense. to me,
you don't have to buy anything.
Yeah, it's like if you like, because there's other ways where it's like a like you might not succeed, but jumping off something really high, it's like you're probably going to die after that.
And so you said it was a couple of years later that you saw somebody else complete their life through exactly the means that you had planned. Like, was that on the news or?
Well, because it was a building at the university.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah, it was a very public place. And it was weird. It was just so weird. And there was definitely a part of it of like, I knew how those people were feeling when they were standing up there before they did it. And like, what was it that kept me from following through?
What was it that kept you from following through?
I don't know. Maybe I guess even in my darkest times, I held on to some thread of optimism. Like, I've always been a pretty optimistic person. Like, we can find a way through this. We can get to the other side. And I don't know. I don't know what those other guys had gone through. I don't know what was on their minds. I think they were older than me. One of them was a war veteran, too.
Mm. Yeah, there's a grip of stuff who grabbed into that. Yeah. So somehow this TED Talk helped you see or remember? It sounds like more like you're defining more remember that you can get through, you always have kind of situation. Is that kind of how it worked, or...?
I mean, it was more just hearing somebody else describe the exact feelings that I was feeling. Because, like, have you ever had that thing where you listen to somebody talking and they describe a feeling you've been having, but they articulate it better than you can?
Absolutely. And to yourself. Like, you're talking to yourself, yeah. And they're better at it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and so that's what it was. And it was, like, half of it was just hearing somebody articulate the same feeling and then also seeing that he had gotten through it, and like he had found his way to the other side of it. And so I was like, okay, this really fucking sucks right now. Everything feels terrible, but there is a way to get to a place where everything does not feel terrible.
Because somebody else has done it.
Yeah.
Somebody else has proven that this disparate or horrible situation I'm in, and as buried as I feel, and as lost as I am, somebody else has iterated that same kind of emotion. So maybe it was a human connection.
I think so. That's a good way to put it. The human connection.
And oddly, I mean, human connection through a screen, mind you, but still human connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's important stuff.
Yeah, and digital connections are weird. Because it's so... When you watch a TED Talk, it's like, this is a human speaking words. But it's also just an image. It's just like light beams and sound waves.
Yeah, well, I mean, honest and true as TED Talks are, it's there's a production level to it as well.
Yeah. And it's like, it's very deliberate storytelling. It's very structured.
But you were still able, through all of the technological, like, weirdness about it, to have that connection.
Yeah, even when it is digital, it preserves some aspect of that, like, core humanity.
Partially because of what they're discussing. It sounds like, especially in this one, like, what they were discussing, their own struggles with depression is something that, frankly, I'm going to speak for Americans in general. Like, we all have some little fight with that. Maybe, I'm going to say probably most of the people in the world, but definitely at least Americans.
Yeah, to different degrees.
Yeah, and it's important. It's been something that's been kind of denied for a long time in our existence, that we aren't paying attention to our mental health and how it affects us in our everyday situations and how we get buried under it. That's something that this conversation hasn't been had a whole lot until recently. Like, recently it really seems to be coming to a head. Like, people are having that conversation. And for obvious, clear reasons. Like,
yeah,
I've had my bouts too, you know. What do you think is driving us for that?
What is driving the new awareness?
Yeah, the new awareness and us as humankind.
So this weird thing happened in the Western world where, like, we got all these strange ideas about medicine and about philosophy. We started trying to organize everything and put it in a box. And just, like, because, like, the Enlightenment period was, like, people started doing science and people started trying to look at the world in this new way. Mm-hmm. And we got, like, too lost in that process. And at some point, somebody decided there was a separation between physical health and mental health and spiritual health. And when in reality, it's like your body is your body and your brain is a physical part of that body.
I'm going to toss one thing in here. And oddly enough, in those that division of three that you just mentioned, two of them got really funded. Spiritual health, churches got tons of money. And physical health, Western medicine got tons of money.
Yeah.
Mental health.
Short end of the stick.
Literally, I'm going to stick an ice pick in your eyeball for a little while. Like, yeah. Like, yeah, short end of the stick.
Yeah, the short, sharp, like, shit-covered end of the stick.
We're going to fix it by mashing that up. So back to your thing, like, what did that, is that divide, what do you think made that divide happen? Do you have any idea? I mean, I'm asking a clearly existential question that I don't think even the best of psychologists or educated people could answer, but.
Will you ask the question again?
Yeah. What do you think made that divide? Were they, because you said there was this run on humankind, mm-hmm. and then we split into these three little pathways. What do you think made that divide?
I think people's desire to be in control on a certain level. Because when you sort everything into discrete boxes, it creates an illusion of simplicity in a complex world. And I think that's a key part of being human, is like the world is so much more complex than we're equipped for. And so people do need to simplify and categorize everything in order to just like keep themselves from going insane.
Well, I mean, that's a very primal thought process too. Like the ability to prejudge a situation and know whether it's a fight or flight situation. That's just something that is in all animals. Mm-hmm. And so it's extremely primal at that point. We just, yeah. As humans, have taken it to a different, whole different level, just like we do everything else. We're really doing great.
And I think it also was like, people don't want to accept that we are animals.
I think that's coming a little bit. I think people are getting a little better with it.
Yeah.
Like society as a whole. There are definitely people that will deny it, but I think society as a whole is coming to terms with that a little bit, that we are, to some extent, primal.
Definitely. I mean, we're seeing a huge resurgence of traditional medicine, of, like, holistic health, you could say, of, yeah. Like, mind, body, and spirit being one cohesive unit, and you need to tend to all parts of it.
Right, and the preventative medicine that comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. If you keep all those things together and working pretty well, you are just generally going to be more healthy in all of those spectrums or all of those realms.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think we are kind of coming to that a little bit. It's weird that it takes us what seems like so long to come back to something that was there at the beginning.
Yeah. especially when you like bringing it back to indigenous cultures, it's like they had that sort of understanding that we're part of nature and everything is connected. Mm-hmm. But then Western culture really thrives on those separations.
Yes. I mean, the divide is part of what has defined a lot of Western culture. But it's the divide in that we're going to divide you up into groups. It's not mm-hmm. the divide of you're an individual and I'm an individual. Those are two different divides. Like, you're an individual and I'm an individual divide is one that is easily respected. Like, I didn't know if you know you from Job before you walked up to my house today. And understanding that you're an individual, that is where that becomes important. Now, if it had been you and, like, six of your crew or something, it would have been a totally different situation, right?
Yeah.
Now we've got a group divide, and that's a different situation. And I think that the group divide has been very focused, especially in Western civilization. We're now back to party politics or whatever, where we build these systems so that we can be divisive about ourselves.
Yeah.
And to feel part of something. Like, I think there's some desire in people to feel like they're part of something in that. Like, I'm part of the Democratic Party. I'm a whatever that defines me as.
I'm a proud conservative.
Right, exactly. And whatever that defines them as. Whereas, can it be like, I don't know. I think that thing over there is kind of horse shit. And that one over there, I kind of agree with. And that one over there, man, I got to think on.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit more of our personal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you identify with a large group? You don't appear to be one, but do you identify with, like, I'm a punk rocker or do you identify with any large group?
I try not to as much as possible, actually. That's why, like, when you, at the beginning, what I said was I'm a human and I do human activities. Like, I try to have the bare minimum identity, because a lot of times identity does just become something that separates people from each other. But when it comes down to it, like, we're all just humans. And then Tiger, what he takes it even a step further than that. He just says, I am.
Yeah. Like,
but I think I like to be grounded in being human, because that's where we're at right now on this material plane.
It is something we can kind of all admit to each other, with the exception of a few people who have whatever belief system they do, that that they don't believe that they are, and that's on them. That's not on me.
But it's almost like having that, like, grounding my identity primarily in being human does wind up separating me from people who identify as, like, I'm a socialist, I'm a Republican, I'm an entrepreneur, and I can't fully assimilate into any of these groups because they're all, like, sub-identities to me.
I absolutely agree. I also, I enjoy the fact that identifying in a very similar way, like trying not to identify, that it allows me a way to bend into this group or bend into that group or bend into a third, like, I'm not stuck in one group.
Yeah.
I can kind of transverse these bridges into these little groups and get little nuggets from all of them. And it allows me to think about the all cosm of the situation. It's a gift.
The all cosm?
All cosm.
Like, as opposed to the microcosm.
Yes, exactly. Microcosm, all cosm.
Yeah.
Setting things on fire. Now it's a podcast. but I think it also gives us that ability to be a bit of a chameleon. And it seems like you've got that in you.
Definitely.
So the last question is, what makes you similar to other people now that we just finished talking about how you're different?
Mm. I think what makes me similar to other people is that nobody knows what the fuck is going on. And everybody is just trying their best to make sense of this chaotic existence. And you come into the world learning whatever you learn. Like, you grow up as like a young black man in the hood, and you have a certain set of opportunities and tools at your disposal. You grow up as a rich white man in Beverly Hills, or a rich white woman, and you have a completely different set of tools and opportunities. And everybody, I like to believe that at the core, everybody just wants to build a better world where everyone can have what they need. And everyone just approaches that same goal with whatever tools and insights they were born into or encountered throughout their life.
But you made me very proud of you right there. As a human being, I like to believe that too. And it's something I came on a couple of years ago. I was thinking about is that even the people I vehemently disagree with are still in their way trying to make the best for everything.
Yeah.
Like, somewhere in Jeff Bezos' head, having $1 trillion is making the world better. I can't in the slightest identify with that, but I like to believe that he thinks somehow that things are better because of that.
Yeah.
And it's gotten me through a lot of things, thinking about people are just trying to do good with the tools they have. Where are we going to go with this? I mean, especially in this trying time that we're in right now, what do you think is going to happen? You started with this, nobody knows, but what do you think?
Well, I do think we're going to come out of 2020 in a better place. Or maybe it'll take until the end of 2021, but I mean, everything goes in cycles, and I think we're just in, like, the chaotic part right now. It feels like everything is burning down around us to a certain extent. Society is definitely breaking down and changing. But like I said, everyone wants a better world. And I think once we live through the chaos that we're in right now, I do think this has woken people up. And there's a lot more resources for people to be building communities together than we have had at other times. And so I don't know what's going to happen over the next couple months. And I got, just in this past 2 weeks, I really have gotten to the point where I am not going to be posting anything on social media for a little bit. I'm just in listening mode right now. Except for right now, I'm just talking on this podcast. But I'm really just I'm trying to listen to what the world is saying right now. And I was going to make a whole video. I wrote out a whole script for it, and I was going to make a declaration this week. But then I realized, that's just your shitty ego talking. I don't think that video is going to help anybody. You need to shut up and listen right now.
Yeah. Like we talked about during break, I had a similar kind of impulse. I was like, no, dude, this is not your time to speak. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, definitely. And so I'm just gonna make dirt balls, try to feed people some good snacks, and see what the world is saying to us.
Which is kind of what it sounds like you were doing before this started.
I also like to talk a lot. I'm a Gemini, I can't help it.
Yeah. Like I said, I've known a couple. So, all right, man. Thank you very much for doing this with me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Cool. I'm going to turn this off. We'll chat some more. Thank you.
Thank you.